Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bad Bones by Loretta Hignett, narrated by Sharon Friedman. Chapter 1. Have you ever got a job that you're really not qualified for, and when you start, you have to bluff your way through it? Boy, have I got a story for you. Back 10 years ago, when I was a fresh-faced 16-year-old, I got a weekend job in a local cafe to save some money for art school. They were paying me to serve coffee and pie. I also served vast amounts of attitude, completely free of charge. But the owners didn't mind that too much. It was a humble cafe for working-class folk, and the customers enjoyed a bit of sass from a pretty young waitress like me. One day, the cook didn't show up, and they asked me if I knew how to bake pies. I said yes, because, of course, how hard could it be? I knew how to Google, and it wasn't hard. I made a great pie. I also poisoned the whole Foggy Bottom Natty Knitters Club. 5 of them were hospitalized. 2 of them almost died. Turns out, egg wash is supposed to go on the pie before you bake it, not afterwards. One nasty case of listeria later, and a whole bunch of very lovely ladies were on death's door. 10 years later, I just found myself in exactly the same position. I'd been offered a very important job, and I jumped right in. It was an amazing opportunity, the kind of thing I didn't know I wanted until it landed in my lap. I could help people, right wrongs, protect the innocent, bring supernatural creatures to justice, all that kind of stuff. I wasn't exactly inexperienced, but I was horribly underqualified, and some might argue I was a little bit of an evil supernatural creature myself, but I really wanted to do it. It was my chance to make a difference in this city. This time, killing people was part of the job description, only if they deserved it, though. Not like poor Betty and Susan from the Natty Knitters Club. The first real problem I encountered was the fact that every single soup in D.C. knew who I was, and none of them would take me seriously. Just like the man in front of me right now. My very first assignment. Mr. Pangalarian stared back at me, blank-faced, for a good 30 seconds. Then burst out laughing.
You? You're the new enforcer?
I kept my expression carefully neutral. That's what I was supposed to be anyway. Neutral, cool, calm and collected, focused and poised, ready to leap into danger at a moment's notice, ready to bring villains to justice and right the wrongs in the supernatural world. Yes, I said, keeping my voice soft. I'm the enforcer now. Conrad Sinclair retired.
Retired?
Mr. Pangalarian's chuckle faded, and he frowned.
Enforcers don't retire. They're human. They get ripped to bloody shreds and die a horrible death a few years into the job.
Yes, well, that's hardly going to be a problem for me, is it? I gave him what I was hoping was a neutral smile. I didn't show any teeth. It wasn't my usual style, so it felt a little funny. Technically, I'm human, so I qualify for the job.
Your mother was a witch.
I'm not, though. I was never inducted into the craft. I'm human. He gave me a patronizing smile.
You're not really human, though, are you?
My patience was being severely tested. and I was only 10 minutes into my first job. Do I not look human, Mr. Pangalarian?
Oh, yes. Your illusion is lovely.
He wasn't wrong. I was a babe. Long, silky, straight black hair, dark, flashy, almond-shaped eyes, porcelain skin. My lips were fuller than usual. It was something new that I was trying, and I quite liked it. It made me look less like my mom, which I enjoyed. And since I could control what I looked like, well, I was going to experiment a little. The half-pixie in front of me gave me another patronizing smile.
But we all know what's underneath that pretty projection, don't we?
That's irrelevant, I snapped. I'm human. I was born human. I'm still human.
I think we'll have to agree to disagree on that one, Prue,
Mr. Pangalarian said.
But I guess technically you are correct. So, why are you here?
I gritted my teeth. Conrad Sinclair is not the enforcer anymore. He put me forward for the job, and I accepted. It took me a few days to think about it, but the longer I thought about it, the more I wanted it. I was ready to step up in the world. Sinclair was right. I was a logical girl. I knew almost every soup in D.C. I had some brand new and very useful skills, a keen sense of justice, and I was ready to kick some ass. You requested assistance from the enforcer, so here I am. Mr. Pangalarian chuckled again. His moss-green three-piece suit jiggled over the top of his large tummy. Short, fat, and round, with bulging blue eyes, a tiny mouth, and chubby round cheeks, the little man looked exactly like you'd expect a half-fey botanist who specialized in exotic plants to look like. Mr. Pangalarian owned and operated a very high-priced boutique floristry on Lumiere Avenue, the uber-chic retail strip in Foggy Bottom where I lived and worked. We were sitting in his little store right now, in fact. As soon as I'd been given this assignment from the old enforcer, I'd come straight here, ready and eager to get started. Mr. Pangalarian had grudgingly pulled out a fold-up chair for me from his back room. He sat on a high stool behind the counter, surrounded by odd thorny vines and blood-red rosettes and thick money plants with leaves the size of my head. Some of the ivy behind him seemed to move in an eerie, sentient way. It froze whenever I looked at it directly. Mr. Pangalarian looked at me and pursed his lips.
Prue, let's be serious here. You're not the enforcer. You're not cut out for it, sweetie. You're a nail technician. I've worked across the road from your salon for the last 5 years. You're not a soup cop.
I ground my jaw. Yes, I'm a nail tech. I'm the best damn nail technician in the city. But Conrad Sinclair has retired, and D.C. needs an enforcer. There's too many different types of soups here in this city. Someone needs to keep them all in line. He burst out laughing again.
You keep us in line? Prue, yesterday you started a fist fight with a centaur in that new ice cream shop near the Kennedy Center.
He took the last scoop of lemon sorbet, I muttered.
And last month, you stole the vampire nestmaster's laundry off the truck and had it soaked in dog pheromones. You almost started a war between the wolf shifters and the vamps here in Foggy Bottom.
I chuckled to myself. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Quickly, I smoothed out my expression. Neutral, Prue. You're neutral and cool and calm and collected. But those days are behind me now. This city needs an enforcer, and Conrad Sinclair thinks I'm the best person for the job. Sinclair probably had a concussion when he said it, but I was going to take the praise and run with it.
Enforcers are always human special forces guys. They've got big muscles and big balls.
The half-pixie man pursed his lips superciliously.
I guess you've always had the big balls. You don't have a body, though.
That's where you're wrong, Mr. Pangalarian. I straightened up in my chair and squared my shoulders, wildly aware that this interview wasn't going very well. I had to try to emulate some sort of cop-like authority, a careful blank neutrality, or else I'd never get anywhere. I pointedly cleared my throat. I'm here to find out more about the report you submitted. You said your niece has gone missing? He hesitated.
Yes.
I pulled out the brand new notepad and pencil that I'd just bought from the corner shop on the way over to Mr. Pangalarian's floristry. Brandishing a pencil, pretending like I'd been a detective for a million years, I fixed the half-pixie man with a frank stare. When did you last see her? He hesitated.
Prue, are you being serious about this? Are you really the enforcer?
I suppressed the surge of irritation that threatened to overwhelm me. Cool, calm, collected. Yes, I'd show you a badge, but Sinclair said the enforcers don't have badges. They have reputations. Mr. Pangalarian muttered under his breath.
Oh, you've definitely got a reputation.
I snapped, listen, do you want your niece found or not? Because I'm the only one here willing to try to figure it out for you. You don't have to believe I'm the enforcer. I don't give a shit, but I'm here. I'm here to help you, you little half-pixie bastard. There was a long pause. He took a deep breath.
Okay, fine. I guess I've got no choice.
Tell me about her, I ordered. Name, age, species, everything. He hesitated, and another moment of silence passed between us. Finally, he slumped down further in his seat.
Her name is Denise,
he said, exhaling.
She's my half-sister's daughter. Gigi and I have the same father, so we're both half-pixie. Denise was born from a tryst between Gigi and another half-pixie, so she's also half and half.
He frowned.
A half-half.
I suppressed a sigh. It was just my luck that my first job was a missing part-fey girl. Anything else would be relatively easy. Almost all of the soups in D.C. were vampires, shifters, and witches, and they were all Earth-based. They didn't come from any other world. They were all variations of humanity, either evolved or mutated, depending on who you were talking to. The Fae, by contrast, had their own worlds. They usually kept to them, too. Ancient magics and our telluric field mostly kept them out of our realm, and their own kings and queens frowned on dallying with humans too much, because they considered us inferior. There were ways to get here, though. A little magic juice and the right invitation would allow a fae to travel to our realm. It's what they did when they got here that was the problem. They were generally horny bastards who would bang anything that moved, and as a result, there were a ton of half-breeds scattered around the world. There were quite a few full-blooded fae scuttling in the shadows, too, and they created a decent amount of trouble from time to time. The only thing that held them back was the fact that the two main fae courts, the Seely and Unseely, had signed the Great Agreement and were sworn to keep the magical world hidden from humans upon pain of death. It was in their best interests, after all. The mortal world had nothing they wanted, apart from gullible humans who they liked to mess with occasionally. It would be difficult to play tricks on a species who knew all about your games and refused to play. All soup species on Earth signed the Great Agreement for their own reasons. The witches didn't fancy being burned at the stake anymore. The shifters had family and friends who were human and would never shift. And vampires? Well, vampires just enjoyed being mysterious and spooky. They also enjoyed hoarding wealth over the centuries, so they were probably scared of the government imposing some sort of vamp tax if they ever came out. But we all understood the real danger. If any of the species ever came out of the soup closet, there would be a power struggle, a war, and life as we knew it would be over. I eyed Mr. Pangalarian sternly. "Have you told the diplomat about Denise being missing?" He swallowed.
"I did send a missive. I received nothing in return."
I sighed. The Fae diplomat was notoriously shit at his job. While the witches had a high priestess in each major city to keep their witches in line, the shifters had their alpha, and the vamps had their nestmaster. The Fae courts provided diplomats. They were officials who had permission to come to Earth whenever they wanted to, ostensibly to sort out any wayward fairies who were causing trouble in the mortal realm. The cultural differences between humans and fae kind of muddied the job description for the diplomats. High fae tended to think of ethnic cleansing as a misdemeanor, but insulting their houses was a felony, which deserved brutal torture and the death penalty. They weren't very good at rounding up horny fairies and kicking them out of our realm, so there were a decent amount of half-breeds scattered around. Although, come to think of it, I'd never heard of a half-half fae like Denise. It was very unusual that Mr. Pangalarian's half-sister Gigi would get involved with another half-pixie for a few reasons, including the fact that there would have been a good chance they shared the same father. While the Fae might not think it's a big deal to bang your sister, for humans, it's enough of an ick to stop them. Pixies, like Mr. Pangalarian's dad, were typical little flying fairy folk. They weren't as powerful as High Fae, the bigger, more magically juiced-up species. Pixies had mainly transformational magic, so they could hide their wings, disguise themselves as normal humans, and play games amongst the Earthlings if they felt so inclined. Their half-human offspring were normal-sized and had diluted powers that mainly consisted of a little glamour magic. Hilariously, full-blooded female pixies excreted magic dust instead of poop and pee, so there was a little black market for pixie dust amongst the soups on Earth. Depending on the species, inhaled pixie dust could do anything from give you the power to fly or give you a perfect singing voice just for a few hours. The thought occurred to me that this might be a targeted kidnapping. "Does Denise excrete dust?" Mr. Pangalarian curled his lip.
"She's a half-breed. Of course not. She poops and pees like a regular human. The most magic she's got is she can turn her hair crazy colors."
"Just her hair?"
"Yes."
"Is she human-sized?"
"Yes. Same as me."
"So she's a little short-ass too, huh?
He huffed. She's about 5'1". She wears ridiculous heels, though. They give her another 5 inches.
I frowned. So, Denise has no other magic?
She's good with plants. Not as good as me. I've got the green thumb. She's got maybe a cyan fingernail. I don't know.
Can she travel? Most half-breeds born on Earth can't travel to any other world, but it would be foolish to assume. She might have decided to try to find her biological grandfather, which would definitely be the most stupid thing anyone could ever do. He shook his head.
No, she wouldn't be able to leave Earth without help. And anyway, I know she's still in the city somewhere.
His eyes narrowed.
I had one of the witches from the Warchope Coven scry for her yesterday. She's still in D.C.
The General City area? He nodded. I frowned at him. I couldn't get a better fix than that.
None of them were powerful enough. And High Priestess Marshalline is still burnt out from the debacle with the Wraith, so I didn't even petition her.
Hoo boy, that was indeed a debacle. A whole other story. It wasn't applicable right now, so it wasn't worth going into. Are you sure you couldn't get a stronger witch to do it? I asked him. Someone should be able to scry and get a closer reading than that. They should be able to get it down to a city block, at the very least. He gave an exasperated chuckle.
Prue, the only other witch in this city powerful enough to get an exact location was your mother.
He pursed his lips, looked away, and muttered something under his breath. Because I have good hearing and I'm a naturally suspicious person, I heard exactly what he said.
And you fixed her, didn't you? She can't do magic anymore.
It stung. You asshole. I breathed out. I had nothing to do with that. I was a child, for God's sake.
Yes, well...
He waved his hand.
It was your fault. You died.
I was 3 years old.
That's old enough to know how to swim.
Are you fu- I took a deep breath and swallowed my rage. Goddamn pixies were mean. No one did cutting personal insults better than the Fae. Okay. Let's all calm down here.
I'm calm.
Mr. Pangalarian blinked at me with his big golf ball eyes.
I've never been calmer.
I shot him a venomous glare. You shouldn't be. The fact that you're calm is suspicious in itself, I snapped back. If my niece was missing, I'd be a wreck. I'd be tearing apart the whole city, trying to find her. I wouldn't be trading bitchy insults with the only person here to help you. He sighed.
Okay, fine. Look, I'm seriously worried about Denise. It's not like her to just disappear. We keep out of each other's way at home. She's got her own space, and she comes and goes as she pleases. I'm not going to pretend that we are best buddies, you know. She's 21 years old. I know nothing about young human women.
He frowned deeply.
Women are weird.
I stared at him. He exhaled.
But she's my family. I'm worried about her. She's supposed to be in school, but they've marked her absent 3 days in a row. She was meant to open the store for me on Monday, but she was nowhere to be found. Her phone is off. The witches couldn't pinpoint her location. I know she's got a human boyfriend, a normie boy, a skinny young lad from the university, but I've only met him briefly once, and I couldn't even remember his name.
His shoulders slumped.
I just can't think of what to do next.
Did you report this to the human cops?
Of course I did. I thought her human boyfriend might have murdered her. That's what usually happens when women go missing, isn't it?
I sighed. Unfortunately, yes.
I thought so. I told them, hoping they could track down her boyfriend and see if he had anything to do with her disappearance. They told me last night that he's been cleared. For the last few days, he's been out of town at a sports carnival.
Mr. Pangalarian frowned, the corners of his mouth pulling down dramatically.
He doesn't seem the type to get involved in a sports carnival. Too nerdy looking. I thought that was suspicious. But the human police seem to think he's not involved in Denise's disappearance at all. His alibi checks out, apparently.
Okay. I fingered my notepad and pencil again. Start at the beginning. Where did you see her last? A tiny sneeze floated over my ears from behind Mr. Pangalarian. He froze. I noticed. What was that? I asked. He unfroze. The motion was deliberate.
What was what?
His tone dripped with fake innocence. That sneeze. I heard a tiny sneeze. His face arranged itself into what he was clearly hoping was a benign expression.
You mean like a mouse sneeze or something?
No, I mean like a tiny creature sneeze.
You're hearing things, Prue.
I got up. Mr. Pangalarian scrambled to his feet. Ha! I pointed to him. You've got something back there, don't you? Something you shouldn't have. He gathered himself up, trying to look taller than his 5'0".
It's none of your business, Prue.
I'd been working at my salon across the street from Mr. Pangalarian's floristry for the last 6 years, and I knew he dealt in some dangerous specimens. He was part fey, for starters. Even the half-breeds like to flirt with danger. I'd long suspected he was dealing in much more than exotic plants. A few years ago, I heard he'd been very reluctantly punished by the diplomat because he'd been somehow importing dangerous botanical specimens from the Fey realms and selling them to the human garden societies, promoting them as new varieties of local plants. He was making good money, too, until one of his variegated fruit salad vines strangled a local grandmother to death. The former enforcer investigated, found the cause, and tapped the diplomat, who was supposed to be keeping the Fey in line. Mr. Pangalarian got away with it on a technicality, because he'd sold the plant to the grandmother as a monster vine, not a monstera vine, and he argued that she should have realized what she was getting herself into. The diplomat thought the whole thing was hilarious. I put my hands on my hips. I'm not just Prue anymore, Mr. Pangalarian. I'm the enforcer. And if you've got something back there that you shouldn't have, then I should know about it. I stomped towards the back room.
No, don't you dare.
He attempted to block me with his whole 5'0" height. I charged straight ahead and knocked him sideways. He went rolling on the wooden floorboards like a bowling ball. I busted through the sage-green door and stomped into the back room. It was a gloomy space with floor-to-ceiling shelves packed with jars with odd contents, like oozy-looking white spheres and knobby bits of unidentified brown things, interspersed with bioluminescent green moss balls under glass domes and trays of suspiciously sharp-looking grass. I pointed at the glowing moss balls. You're still importing banned fey plants, Mr. Pangalarian? Did the U.S. Customs and Border Protection know about this? He glared at me.
I'm not importing anything dangerous. These aren't for sale anyway. They're for my own personal collection.
Is that right? I did my best English detective impersonation and strolled through the shelves with my hands behind my back, examining all the plants on display. What was that sneeze then?
I don't know,
he said sulkily.
Maybe one of my Summerland ryegrass specimens has reverse hay fever.
I paused at the end of one aisle.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?